As we continue with our magical mystery tour, Barry Eaton joins us as we talk about the joy of living, postponing the afterlife. Get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Barry Eaton is back with us. Very well-known radio and television presenter, commentator, author, and journalist, spending most of his career at ABC and various commercial stations in Sydney, Australia. He's also an astrologer, a psychic intuitive, a medium as well. And there, his interaction at Radio Out There, which it's called, is an internet radio program allowing guests to share metaphysical knowledge, much like we do here on the program. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Barry, always a pleasure talking with you. Welcome back.
George, it's great to be back. Lovely to talk to you.
I'm looking forward to this. And this one is very personal for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I really had to bear the soul on this one.
I did not realize the things you had gone through, which I'm going to have you explain to our audience. But my God, I'm glad you've made this miraculous recovery.
That makes two of us. Because the last time I spoke, I had just gotten through the entire cancer experience. And I was talking to you about my book, No Goodbyes, and it was still fresh in the mind. Now, a few years down the track, I can look back on it in a very rational sort of a way, George.
You went through all kinds of things to get to this point, didn't you?
Oh, look, indeed. I think anybody who gets diagnosed with the big C, cancer, the first thing you're going to do is go into fear mode. Because we've had so much publicity about it and so many people are dying, you know, and in the States alone, I think nearly 1.7 million people last year were diagnosed with cancer, and some incredible number actually passed from cancer as well. So, you know, things like that bring up automatic fear, and you've got to get through that, which I had to do because I use that acronym of FEAR, F-E-A-R, as false evidence appearing real. And once I was able to embrace that, that was the beginning of how I was able to sort of do stuff for myself, which is what it's all about.
How did you get diagnosed?
Well, I had something stuck in my throat, and I thought, dreadful feeling. And it was like a cat trying to cough up a fur ball. You know, I was hacking away. And when I couldn't do that, I went reluctantly to the doctor, who then diagnosed the fact that I had a throat tumor, which was a bit of a setback. Here I'm thinking it just pulled something out of my throat.
And, of course, you do a lot of that for a living, talking, so you didn't need that.
That's for sure. Can you imagine, as a broadcaster, as a presenter, you know, you're thinking, oh, my God, is my whole future...
It's going out.
Well, yeah, is my whole career gone? Am I going to be able to talk after all of this?
And they took a biopsy, and the bad news came.
Yep, the biopsy came back and said it was definitely cancer, tumor's got to come out, and then that was the first of three surgeries I had because I also found cancer in my thyroid. So they took that out in two different operations. So within a period of about 4 weeks, I had three major operations. And I hate medical stuff, George. I realize.
Were you scared?
Look, at first, you get pretty apprehensive about it. And then I thought, no, having written books about the afterlife, I knew that, well, for a start, I felt as if I was going to survive all this. I didn't think they were waiting for me with arms outstretched on the other side. And I thought, well, even if it is, even if it's my time, I know all about the afterlife. Well, not all about it, but I know enough about it to know that it's a pretty great place to go back to. So I wasn't concerned about that. But it's the fear of the process. You know, what am I going to go through? That's the fear of the unknown, where people are trying to, you know, do horrible things to your body.
When you wrote The Joy of Living, the latest book here,
yep,
it is a very different kind of book of the things that you've done in the past. This one was different. How come?
Well, when I was diagnosed with a cancer, I'm a person who is not too happy about pharmaceutical approach to the healing and whatever. I'm more of a natural person. And I thought, well, what am I going to do here? I really did not wish to go down the whole chemo track and all that sort of thing. And I thought, well, I've got to start getting some advice. I'm in contact with all these wonderful spiritual entities and guides and whatever. So I started a series of deep meditations, George, to contact my people on the other side and say, right, listen, guys, I need some help. I really do not want to go down this whole track of the fear mode of medical procedures and whatever. What can I do? I'm also a bit reluctant to just go straight into natural therapies because the alternative side has a lot of things going for it, but it's still very much an unknown territory as far as the full treatment of cancer is concerned. So after a few deep meditations, my team came back to me and said, right, okay, what we want you to do is to actually combine the holistic side of things with the mainstream medicine. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. And then they said, afterwards, we want you to write a book about it all. Because, I mean, when you get to cancer, you don't sort of think, oh, well, I'm going to get through this and write a book.
That's right. No, it's not the first thing you think about. That's for sure.
No. But when I got this sort of instruction, yeah, this is what we want you to do, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, which is such a wonderful teacher, isn't it? Afterwards, I realized that there's going to be more people perhaps take notice and really get affected or influenced or inspired perhaps by the fact that you can combine holistic and mainstream and, as I have done 4.5 years ago, go through all of this and come out the other side.
When you used to get the spiritual advice from the other works that you wrote, Afterlife and No Goodbyes,
yep.
In this new book, The Joy of Living, was it newer advice or was it grabbed from the past?
No, it was definitely newer advice because it was a different set of circumstances. With the spirit team that I was working with for my other books, Afterlife and No Goodbyes, that was particularly investigating all of those areas of the afterlife, whereas this was more earthly kind of things that needed to be done and organized. But I've got a wonderful master guide that I work with, and I communicated with this guide and a couple of other of his assistants, I think, and I was reassured that everything was going to be fine. They were going to look after me. They would open doors holistically, and I just had to trust. And that's the hard thing, you know, when you're told, okay, it's going to be okay, but you have to trust. And we're not talking about a man in a white coat in a corner. We're talking about a spiritual advice. And there's always this thought, well, hang on, am I imagining this? Am I going, is this just coming into my mind or what? But when you can give over to this trust in your spiritual advisors, that makes all the difference.
When you finally did this, did you feel a difference personally?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I realized that I had created this in some way. There was a reason. I believe there's a reason for everything. Louise Hay always said that. Everything has its reason.
Yeah.
And I had to think about this afterwards. It's not something you think about at the time. Oh, why did I get this? This is more like the reflective side of things after it's all over. But, yeah, I realized that, first of all, I was partially to blame for it in some way. I mean, I'm a non-smoker and I don't drink very much, so that was the first thing they asked me. Are you a smoker? And I said, no, I'm not. But later on, I realized that I used to MC a lot of events, big events, sponsored by a cigarette company. So I was in a room full of people.
You were getting that secondhand smoke all the time.
Yeah, this is it. I was the only non-smoker.
You probably smoked like a pack a night every time you were doing that.
I was getting paid for it, but I didn't realize I was also inheriting all these unwanted conditions.
How important, Barry, was your experience as a medium or a psychic intuitive to fight this?
Look, very important, because as I said, I tuned in. I the first thing I did, I realized I've got to start meditating. I've got to start connecting with my own intuition and also asking for advice from my other team over there. And if you don't have these beliefs, because we all have guides, every single one of us on the planet, we've got at least one, maybe more, quite a lot of us, and they are there to help. And I mean, they don't sort of send down a letter or an email or something like that. You've got to go into a meditation, I believe, and it will happen in the way that it's best suited to you. I got the messages, I got the feelings, I was able to confirm a lot of this, because I do a lot of dowsing as well, and I'm able to confirm a lot of things with my guides. So this trust was there, but knowing the fact that I can do it, and I've done it before in many occasions, not only for my books, but also to help other people, because I do the occasional consultation when somebody comes to me, and I'm able to tune in and contact people on the other side purely for the people who come to me. So I've had ample proof that I can actually do this.
You have used the runes a lot. Explain what they are for people.
Okay, the runes are these like little flat pebbles, and they go back to Viking times, and there are a whole lot of runes with a glyph, a little design on each one, separately designed for each particular rune, and they all have their own special message. Now, I was introduced to these back in the early 90s, shortly after I graduated in astrology. I was going out with a very lovely lady at the time who was an astrologer, and she introduced me to the runes, and I've been using them ever since. It's a kind of self-divination. What I do is I get these little bag of stones, and anybody can buy them. They're all over the place. They're easy to get hold of. If you can't find them, go onto the internet. And I just think about the problem that I've got, the answer that I want, what do I need to know is my normal request. And I'll scrabble around while I'm thinking and sort of focusing on what it is. And then one of these runes will pop into my fingers at some stage. I don't just pull out the first rune that's there. I just wait for one to come to me. Once again, this is the trust bit. And the messages that I get since 1992 or whenever it was that I started doing this, I have never, ever once been let down, George. Every message I get has got some kind of message in it that is totally appropriate. And the Book of Runes is written by a guy called Ralph Blum from the States. And I've interviewed Ralph on my program many years ago. I don't even know whether Ralph is still with us, because I know he had cancer himself many years ago. But he wrote this wonderful collection of stories about the runes. Each rune has its own history. And I just found that all through my life they've helped me, and they certainly did during my cancer treatments.
Are they little like tarot cards?
No, they're not. They're very small. They're only probably, you know, about 3/4 of an inch, and they're usually sort of oval-shaped. And as I said, they've just got this design or this glyph on them, and they're all very, very different.
You also have had some healing from John of God in Brazil. Now, he fascinates me.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I went over to New Zealand back in 2006 because John of God was visiting there, and I went over and had a healing with him there. And then 2 years later, I was inspired to go to Brazil because that's his headquarters. He runs what he calls a casa, a house down in Abajania, which is in the hills up behind Brasilia. And there are thousands of people go there every week, George, people from all over the world. Celebrities, from celebrities right down to, you know, the poorest of people in Brazil who are bussed in, and they're so poor that they only survive on the bowl of free soup they get after each session. And the healing that goes on there is just fantastic, I've got to say.
How old is he now?
He's about mid-70s.
Still going strong?
Still going strong, although I believe he has had a few health problems. But I don't know whether they're grooming somebody to take over, because it's not that he doesn't do the healing himself. He is a medium. He calls himself Medium Zhao. And he brings through the spirits of 33 different doctors at one time or another, obviously not all at the same time. And whoever the doctor is on duty for that particular session, when you line up and go and stand in front of him, you then are given an instant kind of diagnosis, which says, you know, you either go here, you came for an operation, you go over there to meditate, you know, whatever, whatever. And this is how this huge queue is every day from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of every week. And the number of people that go through the casa is just incredible.
His success rate for healing has got to be astronomical.
Oh, it is. It is. But the interesting thing is, George, that they never turn around and say, oh, yes, it's all going to be spiritual healing, although he does say, you know, he doesn't heal, but God heals. But they never turn around and say, yes, you must stop taking drugs or whatever you're doing. They say, yes, you must continue your normal medical procedures, and we'll combine this with the spiritual side.
I would agree with that. That's probably the smart thing to do.
Exactly. And that was another influence that I had when my team and spirit said to me, yep, this is what we want you to do, combine holistic and mainstream.
The title of the book, of course, is called The Joy of Living, Postponing the Afterlife. Tell us what that all means.
Well, I originally started off thinking that I'd just suggest to the publishers to call it Postponing the Afterlife, to pick up on my other two books about the afterlife, because I said, and I actually wrote it in the book, that I was determined that my next book was not going to be written from the afterlife.
Exactly. What an interview that would have been for me if we were able to get you hooked up that way.
Well, I promise you, George, that if it does happen, you get first go, all right?
Great. Well, what an expensive phone call that'll be, huh?
Well, I believe there are scientists over the other side at the moment that are actually working on this area.
They might
be. We will be able to.
Yeah, they just might be. But anyway, so the title was going to be Postponing the Afterlife. You got it changed.
Well, I didn't get it changed. The publishers at Rockpool, they decided that they wanted to go on something else, and they came up with The Joy of Living. Now, I honestly believe that there was a little bit of a help from the other side on all of this, because the whole area, it's such a positive title, The Joy of Living, and that's what it all really means.
We are in a time right now, Barry, beyond medical conditions, that a lot of people are frustrated. I have never seen, and you know, in some of these horrible episodes that we saw in Las Vegas or just recently in New York yesterday,
yeah,
a lot of people are on edge, they're unhappy, they're frustrated. You know, the North Korean situation has people up in arms, just a lot of things. And in this country, and you're in Australia, but in this country, there's a lot of bitterness between this election, what's going on, and you really can't have a decent discussion with somebody about it because they fly off the top on either side. There's something going on. How do you reach people to get them to just calm down and enjoy the joy of living?
Well, this is it, and this is one of the reasons we want to put some positive things out in this particular story, how you can take responsibility for yourself and do the positive side of things. But look, I agree with you. It's really incredible the dichotomy that there is in politics everywhere, not only in the States. Here in Australia, it's divided down the middle, 50-50 basically between the two parties. There seems to be almost this, I don't know, a move towards conflict where it's a divide and conquer from those people in charge. And that's a pretty old, when you go back to the Roman days and ancient Greece, and that was the way that they used to keep the population in control. So you've got to wonder, and I know you had John Rappaport on earlier,
yeah,
and I know this is one of John's
good guy.
Areas of looking at the whole thing of dividing and conquering.
Can we get beyond this without having spiritual help? Tapping into that spiritual help? Can we do it on our own, or do we have to have that help?
Look, I believe we have to have the help, particularly as individuals. And if we can come to terms with all of this, and it's a pretty rough old world, as you say, but if we can come to terms with it and find this joy of living in our own lives, then once we can, that will spread. That positive energy definitely will spread. And once we can get that up to, say, critical mass, then we can start to have a positive impact on society. And we've got to do something. We can't just sit back and have all of this thrown at us all the time. We've got to take responsibility. And this is a message that I got from my spirit team for the last couple of books I wrote, the afterlife books, that they want us to become more self-responsible instead of turning around and saying to the government, come on, help us. You know, I'm in trouble. Give me more. Do something. You're the government. You do something. No, we have got to do it. And we're not going to be able to do it by being divided. We're not going to do it by hating somebody who doesn't agree with you.
All right, stay with us, Barry. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more about your work, The Joy of Living, Postponing the Afterlife. Yeah, postpone it for as long as you can. And welcome back. We'll take your calls next hour with Barry Eaton. His latest book is called The Joy of Living. His website, radiooutthere.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Barry, what kind of recommendations would you give people who may be going through the same kind of fate you did, but they may not be tapped in as supernaturally, I would say, as you have been? What do they do?
Well, yeah, that's a good question, George, isn't it? Because a lot of people really want to open up. their intuition or whatever, and they feel, oh, no, you've got to be a psychic or a clairvoyant or whatever, and maybe that's a bit of woo-woo stuff anyway. But every single one of us is able to use our intuition to tune in. Well, we all get hunches, we get gut feelings, and that's basically where the whole psychic area starts off. And no matter what you do, we, as I said before, we all have guides. We have spiritual helpers who are there for us. Half the time they're hanging around waiting for us to be able to connect with them. Now, you may not be able to talk to them like you are on the telephone or whatever, but they are there. And once you can trust that you can put it out there and ask for help, and then it's not going to necessarily come in the handout way that we seem to have this in this day of the age of entitlement, but it will happen in various ways. I ask for help, for instance, from my team to help me in various aspects. I had to go and live in another city while I was having all my medical treatments, so I knew that the team had actually found this place for me, and I just trusted that they would, and they did, and it was absolutely perfect. An apartment that I could rent for a few weeks near the hospital, everything worked out, and that was just one of the first things that happened. And all this synchronicity happens because you trust and you open up your intuition and you can get out there and you can communicate with the other side. You may not think you can, but you can. But just try it, that's what I say.
Barry, are you still using this intuitiveness in your everyday life?
Oh, yes, very much. Very much. I get hunches, gut feelings, yeah. Intuition, about all sorts of things. I might be doing I do other things as well as all of this. I'm still doing some media training work and consulting on various things. And I use that intuition, that gut feeling all the time. And if you're really in doubt sometimes, just by going away and having some quiet time, you've got to quiet the mind down. Our monkey mind is going at full chatter. Usually about 18 hours a day, we need to get somewhere quiet so we can focus. And this is the value of meditation. I cannot overemphasize meditation. And that's the basis of any kind of development in psychic or clairvoyant or spiritual areas.
Everybody has had some kind of intuitive thing happen to them, but not everyone acts on it. Sometimes, you know, it's always one of those things where they go, oh my gosh, I should have reacted to that, but I didn't listen to whatever that is. Yeah. How do you get people to recognize that this truly is some kind of intuitive event here? You better listen.
Yeah, look, you can start doing a few little checks for yourself. Years ago, before I started to do all this, I would be driving home from the studios where I was working in Sydney, and I had the choice of turning off left here or going straight up the highway.
Right.
And I would just play a little game with myself every day. Okay, what's the best way? Do I turn off left here and go the back way, or do I go up the highway, which is a bit shorter? But every time I used the intuition that said, yep, turn off here or not go up the highway, it was fine. So I thought one day, oh, look, I'll double check on this one and just go against what my feeling is. Well, it was the worst thing I could have done. I got stuck in traffic. And this is how you can run these little tests on yourself. And sometimes you'll get a buzz, you'll get a feeling, you'll get a warmth, whatever it is, that's something unique to every individual. But you've got to start to work on this. It's not something you can take a magic pill for. You've got to sort of create this yourself and that element of trust.
Is this a mechanism that the physical body has within ourselves to protect us, or is it truly something that is psychic?
I think it's part of our total makeup, because as we've talked about before, and I know that you do a lot of work at afterlife conferences and things yourself, and yeah. Once we can accept that basic principle that we are a spiritual energy having a human experience by using a human body, well, obviously that energy, that soul energy, has got to interact with the physical for us to have the whole human experience. So if we can get both sides of it, and the physical as well as the emotional and the mental energy and the soul energy, because the soul connects, from what I've been told, at the heart. That's why we have the heart and soul. So once you can tune into your soul energy by going into your heart and have that heartfelt energy, then it's a combination. And it's a very powerful combination.
It truly is. And I think once you begin to realize that you've got it, you can use it for all kinds of things. Can you use it to change the outcome of something? So what if the intuitiveness tells you, you know, it's an icy day today, George, don't go out, and you do, and you avoid an accident because you were thinking about it, and some car zooms by you, but you were ready for it.
Well, that's it. It's also walking out the front door, I guess, and there's hardly a cloud in the sky, and your intuition says, hey, take an umbrella, or, you know, put your raincoat in the car, or mm-hmm. whatever. And you think, oh, that's ridiculous. It's a lovely, bright, sunny day. By the end of the day, you're stuck somewhere. It's pelting down with rain, and you're getting soaked.
Exactly. Exactly. How do people get better at doing this?
Practice.
Meditation?
Yep. It's like anything. If you want to play better sport, whether it's tennis or golf or football or baseball or whatever, it doesn't matter. You've got to practice. Pros don't get out there and just sort of hop into the arena and start playing at the top of their game. It's practice, practice, practice. It's the same thing with anything intuitive. You do it all the time. You don't just sort of, oh, well, every now and then I'm a bit bored. I've got nothing else to do. I'll do that. No, you've got to do this regular meditation. I do my very best to meditate every single day. And the more I do it, still, the better I am. I feel better. I connect better. And I know I am better.
How often do you have to do it each day?
Well, there's no sort of have to, really. You can fit it in with your schedule. A lot of people like to wake up in the morning and do their meditation before they head off for the day. But, I mean, if you've got a couple of kids in the house and a very busy time, you may not be able to do that. I find, quite honestly, that I take an hour for lunch, and I work for myself, I work at home. But I take the hour, I have my lunch, and then I sit back, turn everything off, and the last 15 minutes, I just meditate. 15, 20 minutes. And I find that that is enough. Other people might find they want to do a lot longer. It's up to the individual. But I find 15, 20 minutes, I can really, really get down into some lovely meditative time.
Barry, what is your take on manifestation, the ability to change things by manifesting them?
Well, it's funny you should talk to me about that, because a friend of mine who's a healer, who I actually worked with in, and I mentioned in the book, The Joy of Living, she is an energy healer, but she also does this practice called Human Design, which was by a guy called Ra over in America, and she's pretty strongly running the whole thing in here in Australia. And Human Design shows us into various categories, and I'm a manifester, apparently. So if I focus really hard, I've got the ability to manifest. And my partner always laughs and says, you know, if things are running a bit quiet for you, you just sit down and manifest a few voiceovers or a job will come in. I think, well, yeah, I suppose I do. Not everybody is able to do that, but you can work on these things. And it's focusing, and that's the whole thing. You focus on what you want, not what you don't want. And there's a universal law that I've been told about is what you focus on expands. So that if you're focusing on what it is, the direction you want to take, the goal you want to achieve, the objective, whether it's a new job, a relationship, whatever, a house, then focus on it. Do some visualization of what that is. Visualization is so powerful as well.
Can anything go wrong? Is there any downside to any of this?
Well, I haven't found it so far, but yes.
You never know.
No, I'm not trying to go Pollyanna-ish on you here, but I haven't manifested. Well, I've probably manifested a couple of bad marriages, but apart from that.
Well, you are human, right?
Oh, very much so. Just ask my ex-wife.
The human element steps in sometimes, and, you know, as much as you can fight your own illnesses, you're going to die one day. That's the name of the game, Barry. It's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and as we have worked out, and I know you're very much in tune with this, you know, we don't die, only the body dies, but the soul, and which is attached to us by the spirit is the vehicle for the soul is everlasting, and, you know, we can go back and examine past lives and do all sorts of things, because the soul energy has got this incredible lineage, And that is indestructible. So only the body dies. We don't die.
I've got a guest on. I don't know if you know him, Dr. Joe Gallenberger.
I had Joe on my program.
Okay. One of his books called Liquid Luck, about manifestation, about how you can see results. And he would go to Las Vegas with a group of people with uncanny, according to him, uncanny results by the way your attitude was and everything else. So if you go into something and you're upbeat and positive, he said the odds were much higher that you were going to win than if you had gone in negatively. And I'm still fascinated by that, Barry. How do you think that works?
I don't know, but I tell you what, when I interviewed Joe, I said to him, next time you go to Vegas, will you tell me and I'll come and join you?
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely back to the positive mindset, George. I mean, if, as you said so rightly, if you go into anything with a negative outlook, that's what you're going to create. Once again, what you focus on expands. You focus on what you want, not what you don't want. And obviously Joe was focusing, and his colleagues there at Las Vegas, they were focusing on beating the system, or at least doing well out of it.
And I think the same thing then holds true with what you've done to fight your cancer with this manifestation of your positiveness. I think had you gone into it negative, that you weren't going to be able to do this, you weren't going to be able to fix yourself, I don't think you would have been able to.
No, I'd be talking to you from the other side doing this interview.
Well, that's true. Again, and not a bad interview, but I'm glad you're here.
That makes two of us. But no, that's right. I think we definitely have to have this very, very positive attitude. And I did get through it with a positive attitude. But I'll tell you what, George, I also had a lot of help. My lovely partner, Anne Morgenoff, who co-wrote the book, The Joy of Living, with me, and my son, Matt, who also contributed a chapter, they were tremendous support. A lot of other friends, a lot of healers and various other people who helped me along the way. And having that backup team, it's like anybody that you see. A guy gets in the ring as a boxer. He's not there on his own. He's got trainers. He's got all sorts of people like that. There's the backup team, and having this team's
critical.
So important.
It sure is. I'm glad you mentioned her as your co-author. Sometimes when we just have one guest on, we only mention that guest name. But, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into works like this, and a lot of help, too. She probably did a lot of research for you, I would guess.
Well, not only that, but we live in separate places at the moment. We're taking steps to change that. But she gave up a lot to, Anne gave up a lot to be able to come and be with me and guide me and be there for me. And having that love, that's incredibly important, having that loving presence there and the support. Because you do go through some pretty hairy times.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Got a bit grumpy and all sorts of things like that. And Anne was there, and then she encouraged me to keep an audio diary so that I was able to look back again. And when we did write the book, we had the audio diary to look back on. So she was a tremendous influence on the whole thing. That's why she co-wrote the book with me. She wrote half of the book, the whole story from her point of view.
Though I haven't met one physicist who's been able to tell me exactly what the Big Bang is or how all this started from nothing, I'll ask you this question too. Why does this work?
What, the Big Bang?
No, the ability to tap into all these things, to heal, to be intuitive. How does that work?
I think we are powerful beyond our limited imagination, George. I think that we've got so much that we have over the centuries, over the thousands of years, we have buried. We've got tremendous strength there. We've got so much resilience. We've got abilities that we don't even know about. And there are people who are able to tap into this. I'm sure you've had many interviews on the program where you've talked to people who've gone over to various countries in the world, and they've found some amazing people who've just got talents and abilities, healing abilities, everything that is awesome. And I think we've all got these. We've all got the ability to communicate telepathically. And we've all got the ability to heal. We can heal each other. We can do all sorts of things. We just don't do it because it's been civilized out of us.
Oh, there's no question about that. Barry, we're going to take phone calls next hour with people who are into this. Now, I want to talk just briefly about your work as a medium as well. How'd you get involved in that?
Well, It was a long story on that one. I don't know how much time you got before the break.
I've got 1 minute.
1 minute, okay. Barry Eaton 101. I was doing a talkback program, callback program on radio myself, and I was working with a clairvoyant who said to me on air one night, you know, you're going to be doing this yourself very soon. I said, oh, yeah, that'll be right. You know, I'm doing a radio program. I'm running a media relations business, a video production company. I'm going to be doing this when? She said, oh, I will. And I did. It all unfolded. The marriage breakup triggered a whole sequence of events, and that was the start of what turned out to be Barry Eaton, not 101, but Barry Eaton 202, and from then on into a whole new development. The side that I believe that I really came here, the purpose of my existence is to do what I'm doing right now.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come back next hour with Barry Eaton as we talk about mediumship, his work as a psychic intuitive, how he was able to cure his own cancer, your questions, your stories, things that you've gone through. How have you used your intuition, and how did it work for you? I'm George Norrie. Don't forget to email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. We will be right back.